And hello, everyone. Today feels quite special because I'm sitting across the table from somebody who's been very helpful to me and helpful to so many on our island during the COVID-19 pandemic. We have Dr. James Bristow in the studio. Welcome to Inspired Island.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Now, Dr. Bristow is a semi, emphasis on the semi, retired physician and scientist. He is a graduate of Harvard Medical School and was a practicing pediatric cardiologist in San Francisco until his retirement in 2015. He also served as deputy director of the Department of Energy's Genomics, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, facility in Berkeley, California, and senior advisor to the biosciences area at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, commonly referred to as the Berkeley Lab. He now co-directs Vashon Medical Reserve Corps with Dr. Clayton Olney. And it is his Vashon community work the last couple of years that made Dr. Bristow pretty much a household name around here. And Dr. Bristow has been part of a core group of medical professionals who have been helping Vashon Maury Island navigate through this global pandemic, especially through testing and tracing. They have been supported by a strong and dedicated network of volunteers and various island organizations, including Vashon Be Prepared, which is our community disaster prepared coalition, and our own Voice of Vashon, which helped communicate and share resources with the island. So, Dr. Bristow, here on Inspired Island, we usually start with a guest's personal story, but here I'd love to kick off with just a general kind of overview of Vashon's COVID response for our listeners. And the first question I have is, why did Vashon need to develop its own systems and infrastructure to deal with the pandemic?
Sure. So like a lot of the rural U.S., Vashon is a community at risk. We have a median age of 55. It's 17 or 18 years older than King County overall. And we're a long way from access to acute care. It takes 90 minutes to get to an emergency room unless you take a helicopter. So several of us recognized early on that the community was at risk from COVID. Now, it took COVID a long time to get here, actually, and that's true for a lot of the rural U.S. But once it got to the rural U.S., it came in spades. And for most of the pandemic, the overall cumulative rates of COVID in metropolitan, suburban, and rural areas are pretty much identical.
And so was it that the government didn't really have a plan to deal with rural areas right off the bat?
I think, you know, the county public health departments have been understaffed and underfunded for years and years and years. So they were caught somewhat unawares. It's not the people that the public health departments didn't have a plan. It's just that plan really took time to get rolled out, and the focus for King County, appropriately, was where the cases were. Initially, that was in, you know, nursing homes. And actually, King County's done a very good job. I don't have much in the way of criticism for King County Public Health. But I do think that local responses have been shown to be very effective. And lots of public health departments have figured that out as well, that they will make a different specific response in areas of high risk. They didn't have to do that on Vashon, because by the time that became really an option for King County Public Health, we had things pretty well in hand. And by January of 2021, we were working directly with King County, doing contact tracing for the island instead of having King County do it, because we could do it faster. And frankly, we could do it better because we were, relative to King County, better staffed to do it.
And more trusted, like you were staffed with volunteers that were part of the community, which
exactly.
I think was
yeah.
very helpful.
Absolutely.
And for the model, I know a lot of the work was testing and tracing, and that still seems to be going on today in summer of 2022. But did that model inform how the island dealt with vaccines once vaccines were available?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the COVID response really... And I'll thank Vashon Be Prepared, Rick Wallace and Vicky Monterey-Rochou, for sort of orchestrating the big picture out of the blocks. And I'm not sure initially that I actually understood as clearly as I do today how important having the whole thing put together. So there are really three pieces of it. There's a community engagement part, to educate the community about what was happening, what were the risks, how do we manage those risks, and that effort is still going on today. Mm-hmm. The COVID hotline that the MRC has run initially 50 hours a week, less than that now, but have been doing that for a couple of years, also has been critically important in giving people a place to call to get their questions answered when, you know, you're more likely to get a call back from us than you are from your primary care physician.
Yeah.
And so that's the first part, was community engagement. The second part was community health. And so that's doing the testing, doing the contact tracing, informing people about isolation and quarantine requirements, and vaccination when that came down the pike. Mm-hmm. The third piece of it is support, helping people to get connected with support, whether it was for groceries or financial support, to help with rent, either through King County programs or St. Vincent de Paul, sometimes direct aid, but most of the community support was through local charitable organizations. Over $500,000 was ultimately distributed through Vashon Be Prepared.
Wow.
Most of it was donated funds, but some was reimbursed by FEMA, allowing them to recycle that into additional aid as the pandemic wore on. So those three pieces together really fit together. And it's, you know, we have quantitative measures of how good vaccination was and how good our contact tracing was and how our case and death and hospitalization rates compare to other regions. But all the pieces fit together. The
yeah.
community engagement piece was absolutely just as important as getting everybody vaccinated. They mm-hmm. all sort of fit together.
Mm-hmm. And how many volunteers would you say were touching this COVID response in some way?
It has to be over 200.
Wow.
Rick probably has a better count than I do. But the MRC had 6 members when I joined in
wow.
March of 2020, and we're now somewhere around 110 members.
Wow.
So it was pretty amazing the number of people that came out of the woodwork to help. And that's just the MRC. Then you've got all the Vashon Be Prepared people and all the CERT people.
And currently, as we sit again in mid-2022 at the moment, is there anything that you'd like the community to know in terms of how to continue to help Vashon avoid the worst of the pandemic?
I wish I could say, you know, it's all over and we don't have to worry mm-hmm. about it. I don't think we're there yet. Who knows what the future will bring. Mm-hmm. I think the community's done an excellent job and knows pretty much what to do. It's been very helpful to have people continue to call us and report cases so that we have a better sense of how much COVID is actually on Vashon week to week than the numbers that are reported to King County Public Health, because a lot of the home tests don't end up getting reported.
Mm.
Yeah. So having people continue to call us and report cases is really helpful. And also gives us an opportunity to talk with people. Many people who call are calling just to report their cases. Once we have a conversation with them, they usually have a question or two that we can answer, and we're happy to do it.
That's excellent. So just because things seem to be dying down, we should still be calling in to report them.
It's very helpful. And again, the 97% of the deaths in King County in the last 2 months at least have been in people over the age of 50. Well, that's half our community.
Mm,
vaccinated or unvaccinated, we're still at elevated risk compared to many communities. Clearly, the fact that Vashon is one of the more highly vaccinated communities in the area helps us enormously.
Yeah.
But there is still some risk, but people are pretty sage about how to manage their own risk.
Yep, it's now just part of life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for that. And now I'd love to turn to the main focus of today's episode, which is you as a person. We'd love to know a little bit more about you. Where did you grow up and what were you like as a kid?
I grew up in rural Portland, a small community that feels very much like Vashon does now. And I think that's part of the reason I love Vashon so much, a kind of place where if you didn't keep hacking away at the blackberries, they would overgrow everything.
Mm.
A community that was economically diverse, like Vashon, not so racially diverse as we might like, but I think that's actually changing somewhat on Vashon. So it was a great place to grow up. I went to public schools, where I think the most important thing I learned was how lucky I was, because I had some friends who really had nothing. And it was an important lesson for me.
Yeah, definitely. Were either of your parents in the medical field? Did you have any roots in medicine?
Yeah, my father was an adult cardiologist at the University of Oregon Health Sciences Center. He was chief of medicine there in the late 70s. He was definitely a role model for me.
And did you like medicine and science from an early age?
It was really in junior high school where I sort of got bitten by the bug. I had a science teacher who gave me some chemistry books, and chemistry really opened my eyes to a lot of things. I had always been interested in taking things apart to figure out how they worked. Could rarely put them back together again, but trying to understand how things worked, and chemistry was sort of a window into how things work at a scale that you couldn't see, but still had the same sort of how do things work? How do molecular machines work? So the biochemistry was always of interest to me from the get-go. So I became a chemistry major in college and heard a lecture from Nobel laureate Max Perutz about the structure of hemoglobin and understanding how sickle cell disease happened, and that a single mutation, a single amino acid change, was responsible for changes in solubility in the hemoglobin that causes the red blood cells to deform so they get stuck in blood vessels and produces the symptoms of the disease. And it all sort of all made sense, and be able to go from the biochemistry of a single amino acid in this very large, complicated protein. Moving from there to the understanding of the disease was really an eye-opener for me. It took me a while to get there, to do that kind of work, but that's really what opened my eyes to the realm of possibility.
And did you have your eyes set on Harvard Medical School?
Not really. I started going to college so I could get out of high school. I really hated high school. It seemed like mostly a waste of time. Most of my teachers were football coaches that just wanted to talk about football.
Okay.
So I started going to college when I was 16 and went off to college when I was 17. So I went to McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota, which was really a wonderful experience for me. It was, you know, total of 1,500 students. So it was actually, I think, smaller than my high school. So you knew everybody. We had a nice community feel to it.
And so when you were at medical school, what were you studying at that point? Was it strictly medicine, or were you in the biosciences as well?
So medical school is a pretty much, you know, scripted routine. And I hated it there.
Really? Okay.
I really hated medical school. I thought of a lot of it was, we were taught things that weren't very important. In retrospect, my ability to judge what's important and what's not important was not very good. I'm sure that, I was as much to, my unhappiness had more to do with me, I think, than it did with Harvard Medical School. But about a third of my class took a leave of absence after our third year. We were a pretty unhappy group. But most of us came back and finished, and we still keep in touch. But yeah, I was a worker bee, but I had summers off, and I'd come back and I worked in a lab. I'd been working in a lab during the summers off during my undergraduate career, so I continued to do that. And then during my year off, I worked with a pediatric cardiologist at UCSF for a year, and that really cemented my career direction at that point.
So did you head from Cambridge to San Francisco when you were done with school?
Yeah. I did my internship in San Francisco. Met my first wife the second week of my internship.
Oh, wow.
She was a year ahead of me in the program. So after a couple of years in San Francisco, we moved to St. Louis, where she had a fellowship. So I did my third year of residency in St. Louis, which was really a terrific experience. I wanted to get a residency at Washington University, which is a top flight, you know, academic university in St. Louis, and I couldn't get a job there, so I ended up at St. Louis University's Children's Hospital, Cardinal Glennon, and it was one of the most rewarding experiences I had during my training. It was really, it was a completely different kind of place. It's an inner city, rock'em sock'em, gazillion patients. UCSF, you just never saw an uncomplicated anything. In St. Louis at Cardinal Glennon Hospital, you saw, you know, you might see 10 cases of sickle cell disease in an evening. During the summertime, you'd see dozens of cases of viral meningitis. You just had to, it was just a different kind of high volume program than UCSF. And as a senior resident, you're not so much taking care of individual patients, but overseeing the whole operation and trying to figure out who's sick, who do we have to worry about, who don't we have to worry about, what residents do you have to worry about, who can you trust, who can't you trust. Those sorts of things was really important part of my training, and the supportive environment there was really quite unlike what I'd seen at Harvard Medical School or what I'd seen at UCSF in my residency there as well.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of the skills you were learning there probably served you quite well in what you've been doing here on Vashon the last few years.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. I never planned to be a manager, but you do anything long enough, you end up doing some managing.
And what about pediatrics? Did you love?
Yeah. So part of what turned me off and about medicine and led me to take a year to think about what I wanted to do was sort of not seeing a lot of adult disease that was lifestyle related and people doing bad things to themselves. But I wasn't sure I wanted to spend all my time talking with people who didn't take care of themselves. And, you know, pediatric disease is a different kettle of fish. Everybody can get behind pediatric disease. And I liked the pediatricians. I liked working with pediatricians. So I hadn't expected to go that route, but after I'd done my pediatrics rotation, I really liked the pediatricians I worked with. I'd always wanted to do cardiology. It sort of opened my eyes to pediatric cardiology, and that's where I took my leave of absence was really focused on trying to see what was the science side of that like? And that year was very productive, both in terms of learning some science, but also realizing there was plenty of science to do on the pediatric side.
Yeah, totally. And how old were you about during that leave of absence?
Yeah, so that would have been 1980. So I would have been 25.
Okay. So yeah, a key formative year.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, very cool. And so you were in San Francisco a long time. Like, how in the world did you end up on Vashon?
My sister is a history professor at the University of Puget Sound.
Okay.
And we, for many years, had come up either at Christmas or at New Year's with our kids, and who think Tacoma is just the best place on the planet because their aunt and uncle live here. And then they're big cyclists, so they moved to Vashon probably almost 15 years ago. So rather than going to Tacoma for holidays, we'd come to Vashon for holidays. And as time progressed, we just fell in love with the island. When it came time to think about retiring, it was sort of a no-brainer to come up here.
Okay, so it was a retirement plan.
My brother's lives in the U District, and my mother was in Portland, and she's now 92, almost 93. So good idea to get closer to family and sort of worked on lots of different levels.
Yes. And so when you retired, you're still doing quite a lot, right? You're still a senior advisor at the biosciences area at the Berkeley Lab. And then you get swept up in the COVID response here on Vashon. is that sort of part of your personality? Do you have trouble kind of disengaging? Are you just so interested in medicine and science?
Yeah, I don't see it as a problem. I think my wife would see it as more of a problem than I do. I have actually retired from LBL as of January. I'm a freer man.
Okay.
Those same hours seem to have been gobbled up with with other COVID related activities. But it's, you know, I like being busy. So if I'm not busy with the COVID stuff or my prior work, you know, I'm busy in the yard, busy trying to, you know, just keep the blackberries at bay.
And that brings me to a question is like when you got personally, when COVID hit and you started getting involved, did you have any idea that it was going to end up being such a huge time commitment long-term commitment?
I didn't. I thought it would be more than 6 months, but probably less than a year.
Mm.
I had not expected that COVID would become endemic. I really thought it would be more like the original SARS virus that sort of came and went.
Yeah,
which is what many coronaviruses do. This coronavirus behaves quite differently than many others. But I have to say, the working with the Vashon Be Prepared folks, and we have a steering committee, an 8-person steering committee that's been meeting since the first days of the pandemic. We have a meeting tonight. Been meeting weekly. Actually, we met nightly for 3 months.
Wow.
At the start of the pandemic, to figure out what we were doing nightly
wow.
for 3 months. I don't think we missed a single night during those 3 months, because there was a lot to do.
Yeah.
All of the members have other things to do. Some are actually got full-time jobs. You know, Clayton Olney is a full-time neonatologist at Madigan. His wife, Bonnie, works full-time. You know, Zach Miller's 73 years old. He doesn't necessarily need to be doing this. Ina Opliger's, you know, got plenty of other things that she'd like to do. And I want to call out also Lydia Aguilar has just been an extraordinary resource for her outreach activities in the Latino community. One by one, managed to get people into our Rolodex, and then they know who to call when they have questions. I remember we had spent weeks trying to get one of the Latino construction companies in to get vaccinated. And all the workers, they needed time off, and they're working all the time. They were putting a new roof on the building next to the pharmacy.
Mm.
So sure enough, Lydia managed to corral everybody. And Tyler went up on the roof to vaccinate
wow.
him on the roof. And it was just that kind of commitment across the board was really extraordinary. Alan DeSteiger, another who from CERT and Vashon Be Prepared, did all of the logistics or a lot of the logistics. Sean Bozer, who's now off traveling, but for the first year or so, was really incredibly important. And then Sarah Day joined us. At the end after she retired. Once again, like everybody, like all these other retired people, we managed to twist their arm into helping us out. And she's been really very valuable in the contact tracing because everybody knows her. And that's one of the things that really has made this effort work is that if people know who's calling, they're more likely to answer the phone and more likely to talk to you.
Totally. And it sounds like one of my questions was what's one of the, you know, personal highlights of this time. And it sounds like maybe building these connections was a
Absolutely.
Huge personal.
I mean, this is, you know, I've, through my 35 years of medicine and science, I can say truthfully, I've never had a more rewarding professional experience than working with the steering committee. Really been quite exceptional.
Wow. Yeah. We're so lucky, the whole community. Yeah. To have all of you. Yeah. It's pretty remarkable. And you got a lot of press around this as well.
I mean, with the success for the community and the you know, we made it happen. We provided the tools, but the community really made it happen.
Yeah.
And there are lots of communities where maybe that wouldn't have happened. We're writing a paper now to describe our activities and showing that the MRC and Vashon Be Prepared program was actually effective. And so doing, you know, comparing COVID rates, hospitalizations, cases, deaths with other zip codes in King County,
yeah,
and adjusting for wealth and educational attainment, race and age. And we come out, our case rate is about, you know, is less than 40% of what you would predict based on our demographics. You know, the community made that happen.
Mm.
There are lots of places where you might have provided all this stuff, and you know, if you build it, they don't necessarily come. But the Vashon community, despite its history of vaccine hesitancy, recognized that this was real and were willing to do things, not just to protect themselves and their families, but to protect the whole community. I think that message got across to everybody that we had a community at risk, and that the way to protect that community was to protect ourselves and to protect everybody.
Yeah, and one thing that I've learned through all these interviews through Inspired Island is that sense of community seems to be a critical component of the magic of Vashon and why, yeah, we all love living here. And I think that must have served us well, it sounds like, during the
Absolutely.
COVID pandemic.
And that sense of community doesn't exist everywhere. It's very hard to put together in, you know, in a big city somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But
yep.
I think the geographic boundary, we're not necessarily isolated. The fact that we're an island didn't help us in terms of exposure to COVID. We got exposed to plenty of COVID.
Mm.
But it did help us in terms of being able to, the geography does help to define a sense of community. And that's really, it's a very, very important paper published in the Lancet Public Health several months ago. And they, in November of 2019, so right before the pandemic, there was a group put together by, I think, the World Health Organization to look at pandemic preparedness across 123 countries.
Huh.
They looked at pandemic preparedness everywhere, and they ranked, with the pandemic response was broken down into, I don't know, dozens of different potential response elements, and each one was graded and ranked. And so they came up with scores for each of these things. And then the pandemic hit.
Mm.
So you had an opportunity to look at how your
model worked.
Yeah, how's your model work? And it turns out that the model was terrible.
Huh.
It did very poorly in predicting who did well and who didn't do well. So what were the few things that rose to the top that actually correlated? And they were community trust, trust in government, and presence or absence of government corruption. So it was really, you know, things that are really about trust, you know, moral issues, not, you know, how many ambulances you have or how fast you can make a vaccine. It was really about whether communities were actually able to trust their government and do what their government thought was the right thing to do.
Interesting. So it's almost like the intangible aspects were incredibly important.
And I think on Vashon, it gets back to what we said at the outset, the community engagement component of it being so important.
Yeah.
Because by having a trusted community resource translating what the CDC was saying, what new information, what you're reading in the New York Times or USA Today or the Seattle Times, you know, having somebody to translate that and put it in perspective, maybe say it a different way, particularly with a spin that's relevant to Vashon, that was really powerful for people.
Mm. Yeah, very good point. Yeah, well, I'm just very grateful to have lived here during the pandemic as opposed to some other places I've lived. Yeah, for sure. And personally, as we sit now and hopefully the pressure on you has eased a little bit, what's inspiring you these days? Like, what are you excited about?
Well, so, you know, first and foremost, I'm trying to get this paper off my desk so our experience will be published and we can point to it.
Cool.
John Osborne, the former director of the MRC, has been leading the charge to try and get additional funding for MRCs nationwide.
Mm.
There's 800 MRCs, and yet when you talk to many public health officials, they've never heard of the MRCs. Well, those 800 MRCs did a ton of work in the last 2 years, and it should be recognized and included in the forward-looking pandemic response. So there's that advocacy element of it. John is leading the charge, but I want to get this paper published so he's got something to point to when he talks to people in Congress and people in the public health, the larger public health sphere, city and county health officials. And beyond that, we'll see. But, you know, I don't feel like I'm done yet.
Well, that's lucky for us. Well, thank you so much. And Dr. Bristow, we like to end every show with a fun lightning round of questions to get to know you and your life on Vashon a little bit more. Would you be game?
I'm always game.
Awesome. So the first question is, do you have a favorite beverage here on Vashon?
You know, I've recently switched to non-alcoholic beer, and I keep hoping that one of our local breweries will make a move to the non-alcoholic variety, because there are some good ones available now, which has historically not been the case.
Awesome. Well, that's a plug. Get on it, Camp Colvos, right across the street. So if you're not at home or work, where can people most often find you on the island? Do you have any favorite haunts?
You know, I'm often mowing my mother-in-law's lawn just down the block.
Wow.
And lately I've been getting back on my bike. So you'll see me on my little blue bike.
Okay. Are you a road biker or a trail biker?
I'm a road biker.
Okay, nice. And do you have any pet peeves about living on an island?
You know, how can you say anything other than the ferries? there are some inexplicable gaps in ferry service at times, usually about the time when I want to leave the island. There's no ferry for 2 hours.
Yep, I think you're not alone. And do you have a favorite Vashon Island tradition?
I love the Passport to Pain. Mm. Passport to Pain is really a special event. I've ridden it a few times. I hope to do it again, but I think it's got a special vibe. It's a charity, which is just a great thing.
Wow. And where can people find you to learn more about you and your work here on Vashon?
Most people have my cell phone number by this point. Just give me a call.
And we'll have to, once that paper comes out, we'll add a hyperlink to this show's website.
Awesome. Happy to do that.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I think I speak for many, many, many of us on the island that we're very glad you moved to Vashon and helped us through this hard time. And it was a pleasure getting to know you a little bit more.
Thank you, Grace.
And thank you for listening. Again, this is Inspired Island on Voice of Vashon, KVSH 101.9 FM LP. Until next time, stay inspired.